Welcome to Crosstalk Bullhorns, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. Has Trump lost his mind? He goes off the deep end over a tweet and dispatches nuclear submarines. He continues to slap tariffs left, right, and center while acknowledging sanctions may not work on Russia. Also, how long can the U.S. and Israel ignore the world on Gaza? To discuss these issues and more, I'm joined by my guest, George Samueli in Budapest. He's a podcaster at The Gaggle, which can be found on YouTube and Locals. And here in Moscow, we cross to Mark Sloboda. He's an international relations and security analyst. All right, gentlemen, crosstalk rules in effect. That means you can jump anytime you want, and I always appreciate it. All right, let's kick it off with Mark. I suppose we learned over the last couple of days that Donald Trump makes very important foreign policy decisions based on mean tweets. Now, I don't know if that's a good development, a neutral one, or a bad one. That's why we're doing a program on it. Go ahead, Mark.
Well, the reaction of the Russian internet is a celebration that Dmitry Medvedev successfully trolled the president of the supposed hyperpower so hard that Donald Trump went into a tantrum and a peak of rage and made, you know, rather inane and insane comments about the deployment of nuclear missile submarines. When asked about this, of course, the Pentagon was like, yeah, we defer whatever he says. Let's be clear about this. Boomers, ballistic missile submarines, are at on station on their patrol routes, ready on both sides. By the way, you know, off each other's coasts on patrol routes, ready at a moment's notice. You know, in the event of the worst, right? You know, a full scale nuclear exchange to, you know, launch their missiles. They're not diverting anywhere. They're not moving closer to Russia. They're already close enough. This is just, it's the equivalent of boys, jocks, maybe in a high school locker room, measuring each other's status. This is what it is. It is trolling on both sides of the highest regard. I think it is a mistake. Medvedev's engaging, lowering himself to the level of Donald Trump and Lindsey Graham with their social media. Let's be generous and call it diplomacy. What was a mistake? But of course, Trump's response to that takes the insanity to a whole new level.
And we have to point out here, I'll throw it to George. I mean, we've observed for a very long time that this is kind of the public role that Medvedev, the former Russian president, has taken. You know, he's the bad cop. It's pretty snarky stuff that comes out of his account, but I think that's all intentional. It's kind of releasing a little bit of the pressure. I don't know, but I agree with Mark. This is kind of, you know, very high school level here. Your thoughts, George?
No, I absolutely agree. It is high school level. But curiously enough, this was on Medvedev's part less foolish than the tweet that he sent out immediately after the attack on Iran, when he said, well, countries are queuing up to provide Iran with nuclear weapons. Because then you thought, well, which countries are about to provide Iran with nuclear weapons? That's certainly not the position of Iran. Iran says, we don't want nuclear weapons. Certainly not the position of Russia. So it's a strange thing for him to do. But Trump did pick up on that tweet, but in a very innocuous way. And as I said, I thought that was more offensive than this. Because curiously enough, in this case, when Medvedev, when he talked about the dead hand, he was essentially referring to this Russian second strike capability. So in other words, he's telling Trump, well, if you're thinking of launching an attack on us, remember, we will absolutely unconditionally destroy you. So don't even think about it. But yeah, Trump took the bait and, of course, made himself look somewhat rather foolish because he's still going around saying, well, I need the Nobel Peace Prize. You know, I got to get that Nobel Peace Prize. So, and it's not quite the behavior you would expect from a Nobel laureate.
Yeah, you know, that leads me to, I suppose, as we're speaking right now, Steve Witkoff is on one of his... Another visits to Moscow, presumably to speak to the President Vladimir Putin. Matthew Whitaker, who is the U.S. ambassador to NATO, why he has that job is a mystery to me. I mean, he has no experience whatsoever in foreign policy. But, you know, that's not a requirement these days, I suppose, to have high positions here. It's reported that, you know, Washington is hoping to lead Russia and Ukraine to the negotiating table. What does that mean, Mark? I mean, they have been at the negotiating table, hasn't really gone very far. Again, the presumption is, you know, to work towards a ceasefire. The Russians have said they're not interested in a ceasefire. You know, it's one of these things, you know, I think they hear us, but they don't listen well, Mark.
I'm not even sure they hear us, to be perfectly honest. Once again, the U.S., the Trump administration is assuming this role, you know, that we've become accustomed to, where they pretend that they are some neutral third party arbiter bringing two warring sides together solely in the interest of peace, rather than the primary instigator of this conflict, the primary driver of it, but on the losing side of this conflict, desperately trying to preserve a U.S. proxy regime in Kiev. And the stress is on the desperate and the frantic and the panicked, because that's essentially what they are right now. Russia's position, their if you want to call it demands, if you want to call it ultimatums, their points of what is necessary for a ceasefire and a permanent settlement have been standing for well over a year now and have not changed. They're not going to compromise. They feel no need to compromise, because they're winning this conflict. If the Trump administration really wants this conflict to end, it's really simple. Then they can negotiate on Russia's terms, right? And I think it's important. We had it revealed by Rubio that actually the U.S. has been in quote-unquote secret negotiations with Russia, obviously during the backdrop of the last meeting in Istanbul between the Kiev regime and Russia, which is where, shall we say, the real conversation was taking place. Because at the end of the day, as Lavrov pointed out this week, this conflict is about Russia standing alone, or, you know, with a little bit of North Korean help, maybe, against the entirety of NATO and the West. And they're still doing a pretty bang up job of it, I think so.
You know, George, I think Mark pointed out something really important that I think doesn't get enough airtime, is that it looks now the default position of the United States / NATO is to preserve a friendly regime in Kiev. Now, that's kind of lowering the bar. It's a far away from as long as it takes. OK, what do you think about that? Because, and also this threat of new sanctions and tariffs and all that, I don't think anyone here is losing any sleep about that. But by Trump's own admission, it probably doesn't work. Again, our problem here on this program is that we're dealing with common sense where it doesn't seem to exist. Go ahead, George.
No, you're absolutely right. It doesn't exist. And that's what's so curious about Trump's position and NATO's position, is that they don't actually, in a way, have a position. I mean, it's like, what are their terms? What terms are they prepared to settle for? So, yep. As Mark pointed out, Russia has endlessly, time after time, is spelled out what their position is for it to get a temporary ceasefire, what their position is on a permanent ceasefire, all of the things. It's they say it like over and over again. But when it comes to the NATO, and when it comes to, you know, Trump in particular, it's never spelled out. I mean, Trump, yeah. You know, if it's Russia returning to the 1991 borders, well, that's, of course, a non-starter. But NATO doesn't even say that. They just talk vaguely about, oh, well, we must maintain the sovereignty and independence of Ukraine. And Trump doesn't even care about that. So Trump issues these demands. Oh, Russia needs to accept a ceasefire within some, you know, whatever time frame. Otherwise, I'm going to do this, this, and this. But then, essentially, I mean, you know, he says, "Well, but what are the terms?" I mean, you can't just simply say, "Well, they're going to have a ceasefire." What terms would you accept? And Trump has never spelled any of that out. And you have to think he doesn't care really whether Ukraine's in NATO, Ukraine's not in NATO. He just somehow wants to notch up some kind of a victory for
He wants him. The Nobel Peace Prize.
He wants that Nobel Peace Prize. And that's what makes this whole thing, you know, really unattainable. There's not going to be a ceasefire in the next few days. So he's now obligated to slap these tariffs on.
Well, no, maybe not. Maybe not. Okay. Because we have, again, I assume as we speak here, Witkoff may be in the Kremlin right now. Mark, by the end of the day, there could be a new deadline. There could be a new ultimatum. I mean, you know, as the sun goes up and goes down, it seems that, you know, it changes that quickly. Mark.
Yeah, it is. And we really have no way of knowing. The Trump administration has flipped and flopped and turned left and right and upside down on this position. They started out with rather candid statements, right, of that this is a proxy war and that NATO can't expand to Ukraine and everything. And they were talking, you know, a permanent peace settlement. They've dropped all of that now and adopted the Kiev regime / European line of an unconditional ceasefire and considering nothing else. That's what they've been working on. You know, call it the Kellogg plan, if you want, such as it
is. Well, Mark, I mean, why do you think that happened? Because the initial approach, it had some currency. It could might have worked. But, you know, shifting to the Kellogg plan, the NATO plan, that is a dead end.
Yeah, because Trump is a weak president. He has no real knowledge of what's going on. He put out a social media tweet, many social media tweets, but one of them this week talking about millions of Russian casualties and that Ukraine was only suffering 8,000 casualties. I mean, clearly showing that he is just taking the Kiev regime's propaganda on board, obviously spoon-fed to him by his intelligence. Tulsi Gabbard, what are you doing? And he has a completely erroneous perception of what is actually happening on the battlefield. And that is leading him to make very, very bad policy decisions. And he is leaning towards, shall we say, the Russia hawks in his administration now more than he was to begin with. But again, he shifts position back and forth. There is no unified consensus within the Trump administration, and Trump himself has no strong vision or idea how to get out of this. As you said, he's primarily performative, and he just wants a social media win, much like with his tariff deals with Europe and Japan. He just, his bombing of Iran and walking away, his declaring victory over the Houthis and driving out. He just wants to say, I've won, and walk away.
And it looks like, before we go to the break here, all of these tariff deals, none of them have been written down. There are no details at all. It's just a declaring victory. All right, gentlemen, I'm going to interrupt myself. We're going to go to a short break. And after that short break, we'll continue our discussion on some real news. Stay with RT. Welcome back to Crosstalk Bullhorns, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. To remind you, we're discussing some real news. George, let's switch gears a little bit here. I think it's impossible not to notice the amazing sea change that's going on around the world, looking at the devastation going on and starvation in Gaza. We have countries like France and Britain and Canada that have basically held the line, the U.S.-Israeli line about Hamas and the two-state solution. You know, I don't want to waste time on all the verbiage that we've gotten so used to over the decades. But there does, you know, obviously the Global South has come out very strongly against this, and there's a fragmentation going on in the West. Where is this going? Because, you know, again, you know, Donald Trump just about befuddles us. He says, yes, there's starvation going on in Gaza. And he's just upset that people aren't giving him credit personally for sending some aid that apparently never makes it to the people of Gaza. Where is this going? And is the status quo tenable?
I don't think the status quo is tenable. And I think that what France and maybe the UK are doing will have significance, because it does completely isolate the United States and Israel. And there's a limit to what you can do when you're completely isolated. The United States is wedded to NATO, it's wedded to Europe, it's you know, committed to this their agenda. So it's going to be very difficult to just go on saying, well, we will carry on with what we're doing, given also the images. And Trump knows that. Trump is, you know, he's very, you know, very savvy when it comes to the media. He sees these images on television of starvation, and you know, he sees the sort of the feeling, the attitudes of the world, attitudes also at home, where young people, young Republicans, young MAGA supporters, or even not so young MAGA supporters like Marjorie Taylor Greene, they simply don't have the attitudes toward Israel that an earlier generation had had. That whole thing, the moment you say, I love Israel, and the audience, you know, begins to stamp their feet with excitement. None of that is true. So that but Trump knows that he has to do something. He can't just keep trotting out Tammy Bruce and just says, oh, it's everything is the fault of Hamas, you know, the starvation, it's Hamas.
Yeah,
it's Hamas. Just keep doing that. It isn't working. And it's a terrible, terrible look for the United States.
Yeah, but, you know, I'll throw it to Mark right now. But we just did a segment on Ukraine. He seems to be influenced by, you said Russia hawks in America. I don't think there are any real Russia experts. I think they're just hawks, okay, with the desire to maintain hegemony as it slips through their fingers here. It's more of a public relations thing. I mean, if Trump is saying to the public, you know, Israel, and I'm paraphrasing here, should finish it off, whatever that's supposed to mean, it most likely will happen. The consequences will be further down the line, I would assume, but I don't think there's anything that's going to move Trump right now, considering the trajectory that he is, his administration has been on since taking power.
So I want to object to one thing. There is not a starvation occurring in Palestine. Starvation, that framing, that's a passive word. That is something that's happening, right? This is weaponized starvation, a policy. This is genocide, what is occurring, right? And we have to be absolutely clear about this. And the Trump administration is giving a green light and facilitating that genocide, that weaponized starvation in every possible way. You know, claims of aid getting into Gaza, right? That is the equivalent of, you have a mass of hundreds of starving people who are being shot at with weapons and tanks just for showing up, and then dropping a box of Tic Tacs in on a crowd of starving people. That's you know, claims of aid getting in, and when it does get in, and you know, this is It is a bit of sleight of hand, right? It is meant to obscure what is really going on here, because that little bit trickle of aid that is getting in can't possibly meet the nutritional needs just to keep the Palestinian people in the giant open air prison of Gaza alive. And when the advisors who are advising Trump, right? I mean, this is obviously an Israel first foreign policy. At least when it comes to the Middle East, and there are no experts on. It's not just about Russia. It's about every region. The U.S. has ideological politicized hacks who are giving bad information on every situation. I don't even know if Trump really has an idea of what's going on. Not that he would necessarily care, because he doesn't, obviously, through whatever racist prism he looks at the peoples of the Middle East, he does not see the Palestinians as full human beings deserving of human rights. But that's long been the position of U.S. presidents going back decades.
Well, yeah, but that's always been the position. Well, for 500 years of Western colonial settler ideology, and that's one of the reasons why I think it's interesting to see the possible changes going on in Europe, because it was par for the course. You know, Georgia, we've talked at great length how Russiagate bled into policy and damaged U.S.-Russia relations.
I was really appalled when the Canada came out and made the announcement that it would recognize Palestinian statehood at the United Nations General Assembly next month. And then Trump reacted that he would punish them through tariffs and sanctions. I mean, this is really, and Bolsonaro, you know, attacking Brazil over an internal political squabble and maybe an activist judge. What is going on here? I mean, not only is the United States isolating itself from the world, which for Americans, they might not even be aware that they're being isolated, okay? But how these things spill into policy in other ways, it's quite extraordinary.
It is, and this is what makes the Trump policy rather baffling, because, you know, the whole point of tariffs was to protect your infant industries, or you protect your strategic industries from foreign competition.
If they still given, that's assuming they exist.
They do exist, but tariffs are not supposed to be just things that you use in this haphazard, random way in order to punish countries for their policies. And that's what he has done with Canada. He said, "Oh well, that's it. Well, I'm not going to sign any deal with Canada because of it recognizes Palestine," which is also at odds with his apparent indifference when Keir Starmer announced that he may or may not recognize Palestine in September. But suddenly he was infuriated. How dare Canada go down this path? But the isolation, I think, will get to the United States. First of all, Trump isn't going to be there forever. I mean, already the jockeying is beginning for 2028. So there's going to be somebody else who's going to come in. I think that there is a change taking place. There's clearly a change taking place, even in the United States. I mean, you have to accept that, you know, among younger generation, the simply Israel just to them is just kind of a rather repugnant state. Younger people identify with Palestine. They don't identify with Israel. You know, so that's already a change. But when you have 4 out of 5 permanent members of the UN Security Council recognizing Palestine, when soon you're going to have 3 out of 7 of the G7 recognizing it, that is going to have an effect. And I think whoever comes after Trump will feel it. And I think Trump is feeling it. I mean, after all, he is making noises. Admittedly, he then tries to shift the blame onto Hamas, but he is making noises. After all, he has distanced himself to a certain extent from Netanyahu. I mean, Netanyahu says, there is no starvation, there's no hunger in Gaza. And Trump at first seemed to echo that and said, yeah, there's starvation. So he's already feeling a certain amount of pressure.
Yeah, but at the same time, Mark, when the last trip that already this year, and that Netanyahu made to the Oval Office, and the media asked him, Trump, what he thought about the two-state solution, and he just turned it over. Bibi, why don't you answer that? I mean, that's you're speechless after something like that, Mark.
Yeah, I think the only thing to read from the Trump administration's applying tariffs to Canada, because at the mayor's suggestion that they might actually join the rest of the world outside the West and recognize a Palestinian state, as I don't know, I guess the U.S. Industry is so fragile that the industry of a Palestinian state might overwhelm it. I mean, I are we supposed to believe that? I obviously not, right? Obviously, tariff and sanctions policy have been completely intermingled and there's no meeting. Tariffs are supposed to be, you know, an economic protection area or revenue generating measures. Sanctions are political punishment. And Trump doesn't like the word sanctions and he does like the word tariffs. So now he sanctions everyone and calls them tariffs. I mean, that's, you know, the level of that this administration is at. And obviously, everything is political here. And if he tariffs the whole of the world over Russia, over Bolsonaro, over Palestinians, recognition of Palestinian statehood, he's going to find that the rest of the world just stops doing business with the United States. And I think he is hastening the economic self-isolation of the United States, the political and economic self-isolation, something that is long coming, but he's just making it so blatant and unavoidable. And I have to say that, you know, this Starmer, the British Prime Minister, and others saying, oh, well, if Netanyahu doesn't do this by this date, then we'll actually recognize that Palestine is a state. What is that? Recognize Palestine? Palestine?
Well, who is he to say self-determination? It's the conditionality of self-determination. It's really quite, again, arrogant and very neo-colonial in mindset. Okay, and again, wanting to play both sides at the same time. This is the elites that we have to deal with. All right, gentlemen, that's all the time we have. I want to make a small public announcement here. Team Crosstalk is going to go on vacation for this month of August here. Unfortunately, you will not see our shining and intelligent guests, Mark and George, every Sunday here. But September is on its way. So thank you for being with us, gentlemen. I want to thank our viewers for watching us here at RT. See you next time. Remember, Crosstalk rules.